Laudato Jesus Christus. This is the English program of Vatican Radio.
Hello and welcome to our half-hour English feature program. I'm Susie Hodges. These are the stories coming up on today's program. Family Lifeline. The World Meeting of Families in Mexico City draws to an end this weekend with a live video link-up with Pope Benedict. And we hear about a church-sponsored program that helps couples whose marriage is on the rocks to overcome their difficulties and stay together. And Gaza Insights. As international condemnation grows for the high cost in civilian casualties of the ongoing offensive in Gaza, we find out more about the feelings and fears of the Gazan population. The Church's sixth World Meeting of Families concludes this weekend in Mexico City with a Mass that will feature a live video link-up with Pope Benedict from the Vatican. During the link-up at the end of the Sunday Mass, the Pope will greet the participants and will also announce the venue and date of the next World Meeting of Families before imparting his apostolic blessing. The theme of this year's meeting is the Family, Teacher of Human and Christian Values. And at the opening session on Tuesday, Mexico's President Felipe Calderón warned that a breakdown in family values in his nation is leading to increased social problems and crime. In many Western countries, the institution of the family is facing unprecedented difficulties, with more and more marriages breaking up. But amidst the doom and gloom, I've been hearing about an inspirational marriage rescue program that offers a lifeline to couples in crisis. Let's hear my report.
I just call to say I love you.
In the US, over 40% of marriages end in divorce. That's the depressing reality borne out by the statistics, and it's an indication of the daunting challenges many couples face in trying to keep their marriage afloat in today's secularized and high-pressured society. Successful marriages, however, don't work on autopilot, at least not for long. They need care and nurturing, and it's especially vital that the spouses keep the lines of communication open between the two of them. How many husbands or wives argue frequently or feel frustrated, hurt, or angry with their spouse? It's in situations like this that all too many couples believe that the only solution is to go down the path towards separation and divorce. But if married couples in crisis know where to look, help is at hand, and that help can often save a marriage. Originating in Canada, Retrovi is a program offered by Catholic couples and a priest to couples with marriage problems. Thousands of couples headed for cold, unloving relationships or divorce have successfully overcome their marital problems by attending a Retrovi program held in various countries throughout the world. The program consists of a weekend experience combined with a series of 6 to 12 post-weekend sessions. The main emphasis of the Retrovi program is on communications in marriage between husband and wife. It gives the couple the opportunity to rediscover each other and examine their lives together in a new and positive way. The teams of couples who give presentations during the Retrovi programs have themselves successfully weathered a crisis in their own marriage. And it's their success in renewing and saving their own marriage that provides help and encouragement to the couples attending the program. Frank and Julie Laboda and Father Watt Bracken are American, and all three of them are volunteer international coordinators for Retrovi. Frank and Julie are married with four children and live in Madison, Wisconsin. They were pointed in the direction of Retrovi at a time when their own marriage was on the rocks and they were on the brink of divorce. They spoke to me about some of the reasons why their marriage was failing and how attending a Retrovi program helped to renew and heal it.
We had several problems. basically a severe miscommunication and working opposite schedules.
So the communication issues led to us living quite separate lives. And as we worked different shifts in our work schedule, she was working days and I was working nights. And I began an affair with a woman I worked with and spent 9 months in an extramarital affair with a woman from work. Our marriage obviously went further downhill after that. And we were separated twice and 5 weeks away from our final divorce when we found Retrovi.
And how did you find it?
My mother-in-law, Julie's mother, gave her an article from a magazine in the States about the program, and I called right away and registered us for the weekend experience.
And, was it really quite dramatic, the turnaround?
It was extremely dramatic for me, but I still had a lot of fear and panic and trust issues. But it gave us hope, because the couples that presented the weekend, the couples on the team, had been through misery even worse than ours, and we thought, if they can make it, maybe there's some hope for us too. And it was very grace-filled. You could feel the presence of God. And the team priest was there as well. And we wondered what the priest would have to say about marriage. But it was very grace-filled. And I was overcome with the hope that they offered.
And weren't the majority of the people on this program Catholic? Because you say you're open to all religions or none, or those who have none.
Yes, I think on our weekend, a great majority of them were. But you're right that couples that come to Retrovi come with all different types of faith or no faith whatsoever.
Now, the program consists, I gather, of a weekend experience. And then this is followed up with 6 to 12 week post-weekend sessions over a period of 3 months. Did you already find after that first weekend that you were discovering where things were going wrong or where to pick up the pieces? Or was it more of a question of learning to trust?
I think I knew where things were going wrong before, but I was always pointing a finger of blame at Frank. So the weekend helped me realize what role I played in the deterioration of our marriage. And then the follow-up sessions were integral in change, because the post-sessions offered a chance to look more deeply at specific issues like trust, conflict, sex, forgiveness. And so that was really where the bulk of the change occurred throughout the post sessions as well.
I think for me, the weekend showed me what could be right about our relationship again and reminded me of the reasons that I fell in love with Julie in the first place and why we were together from the start of our relationship, rather than showing me what had been wrong, because you could see that in our behavior with one another on a daily basis. But being able to talk with Julie and communicate with her on a whole different level over the course of that weekend and then the post sessions really showed me what was right about our relationship again.
Is it a prerequisite that for people who go to Retrovi that both couples want to save their marriage? Because presumably if somebody's already given up on it, then it's hopeless.
Well, in our case, Julie had given up. This was her way of checking this one last thing off of her list of things to do before the divorce was final. So no, I don't think that both couples have to be committed to saving their relationship. As long as they're committed to spending the time on the weekend together, it could change their relationship just by being there together.
Each couple is asked to participate fully in the entire weekend and the follow-up sessions. But we would be lying if everyone who came said, yes, I'm 100% committed to making this marriage work. But over the course of the weekend, most of them change their minds and decide, yes, this is worth saving.
Father Walt Bracken is a Catholic priest from Chicago. And along with Frank and Julie, he gave his viewpoint about the strengths of the Retrovi program.
Before I go into what happens on the weekend, I think what is key, and Frank and Julie have already mentioned this, is the hope that is given on the weekend. The couples come there with a sense of hopelessness with regard to their own relationship. By listening to the stories of other couples, they recognize the fact that other people can go through difficulties as well and come out of those difficulties on the other side with a great deal of hope for their relationship. I think that is the beauty of a peer ministry. Peer ministry allows couples to tell their story of their misery, their story of their hopelessness, and how they moved to a sense of hope. And this is done simply on the weekend by 3 different couples and a priest giving a series of presentations. And the idea is that the couple gives a presentation with a priest, After that, the couples who are participating in the weekend are given a question to reflect. They do some writing, they come together, and then they share with regard to this. And through these series of presentations during the course of the weekend, couples are able to communicate with themselves much more deeply. What we tell the couples on a Friday night is we are not there to solve their problems or to work on their problems. What we do is work on their communication so that once they begin to relate to each other and to communicate to each other, then they begin to solve their own problems on how they choose to solve them.
Do you often find, in fact, that it's this lack of communication between the spouses that is at the root of these marital problems?
Yes, very often, communication. So it's teaching a process of communication. That basically is what the weekend is about, as well as the follow-up sessions.
We spend a lot of time talking about how we're feeling, so we emphasize that a marriage is not just about an exchange of information, but about how you feel about what's going on in your life and the issues that create misery in your relationship. And it's important to note that couples that attend Retrovi are not asked to share their problems with the other attending couples. They're not asked to air their dirty laundry with the team.
But do they nonetheless?
Sometimes they might pull you aside and share something with you personally, but not out amongst the group. It's not allowed. It's not asked for in the group. They're asked to privately reflect. At first, I questioned the faith aspect of Retrovi because as our marriage started to deteriorate, so did my faith, or at least my practice of the faith. I started going to church less. I started wondering if God was going to send me to hell for filing for divorce. And I wondered if the weekend would be not punishment, but condescending because I was so hopeless. But I found it to be very gentle, and it opened my eyes to the grace and mercy that God had for me. And it started to show me that I was capable of giving forgiveness, but that I was also in need of asking for forgiveness. And that was one of the greatest gifts that Retrovi gave me, was that it seemed as though I tripped some sort of wire and God really spoke to me through the Retrovi program.
Now, I don't know whether you keep statistics, but do you happen to know roughly what percentage of the couples who come to Retrovi do manage to save their marriage? If you have any idea at all on how successful this program is?
We've seen somewhere in the neighborhood of 75% to 80% of marriages at least continue on. Successful marriages, probably half. But they stay in their relationship up to 80% of the time.
That's quite a high percentage.
It's a very high percentage. And it's an experience that we see over and over on the weekend from Friday night to Sunday.
And what do these couples who, as you say, who successfully stay in their marriage after attending a program at Retrovi, what do they put it down to, this success of the program?
First and foremost, the sharing of each other, the peer ministry part of it. And then secondly, the communication tool that we use in the program to share with one another on our feeling level rather than just on a factual level.
And do some of you, these couples that attend this Retrovi, do they actually often become friends afterwards and stay in touch afterwards?
Absolutely. There's a part of the program called CORE, Continuing Our Retrovi Experience, that's in most places is a monthly support group. It becomes a social gathering and a way to stay in touch with people who are working in the same direction.
Our best friends are Retrovi friends.
And the stigma that goes along with being in trouble in your marriage is gone. Because of the pretense is gone. You're able to share on a more difficult and more open level with one another. That whole sense of being alone is washed away.
I just called to say I love you.
But what real-life anecdotes do they have of couples attending the Retrovi program whose marriage seemed doomed to collapse?
I can give you a story about a couple that we know. They were having difficulty. Of course, that's why they were on the weekend originally. They would do well after one presentation in their dialogue, and then they'd go back after another presentation, and they would find themselves arguing again. So on Saturday night, after the first presentation, they seemed to be doing well. After the second presentation on Saturday night, they started an argument, and they figured that it was no use. So they packed their bags, and they decided to leave the retreat house. Well, as happened, as they were driving out of the retreat grounds, there was a chain across the gate of the retreat house. And so there was no way that they could leave the grounds. So they turned around, they unpacked their bags, brought them back in to the retreat house. And long story short, I think this is God's sense of humor by having that chain across the gate, because this couple then continued to work on their relationship, not only on that weekend, but they themselves became very involved with Retrovi after this, to the point where they have given a good number of weekends themselves and a good number of presentations to help heal other marriages.
Do you know of any other particular anecdotes that stick in your mind?
Several, including us, but another couple that when we were presenting team on a weekend, this couple too was up and down and finally got in a huge argument and decided to drive home, and they had about an hour drive. They got about 10 minutes from home and decided it would be harder to tell their kids that they gave up than it would be to turn around with their heads hanging and walk back in the door of Retrovi. So they turned their car around and they came back and finished the weekend and completed all of the follow-up sessions.
And as far as you know, they're still
and
together?
And as far as we know, they're still together and doing well.
You talked about how in this program you try to teach couples communication tools, how to communicate with their husbands. Can you give us any concrete examples of this?
Absolutely. For example, instead of saying, I did this, this, and this at work today, you might say it, but then how did you feel about that? And being able to share, for example, on the Retrovi weekend, if we discussed conflict and I gave you a list of 12 hot topics that couples might argue about, in-laws, money, work, sex, etc., you might be able to pick one of those topics and form a question around it. How do I feel about our discussions on money? And the important part is not what the issue of money is, but how do I feel about that? Or how do I feel when we discuss this? And so you come to an understanding that, oh, maybe we really are feeling the same way. So now we can sit and calmly have a discussion about it without blaming, accusing. And when you begin from a feeling level, it just sort of diffuses all the anger that you started with in the first place.
Now, coming back, perhaps, shall we say, to the general state of marriage in society today, as you all know, particularly in Western countries, the rate of divorce is incredibly high. Why is that? Why do people give up so quickly, do you think? What more could the church and other bodies be doing to try to bring down that rate of divorce, of separation between couples?
It has a lot to do with the family. John Paul the Great was right when he said, as the family goes, so goes the world. And so Retrovi in the church, I think, is certainly moving in the right direction to curb the divorce rate.
I just think it's so hard, especially in Western countries. We're so bent on instant gratification. And if it's not what I want, I'm going to take it back, return it, because it doesn't fit right, and that's carried right over into our relationships. It's not making me happy, so I'm going to return it and start over. And it's greener grass on the other side of the fence, and in most cases, in mine for sure, you know, in being involved in a nine-month relationship with another woman, it's no different. The problems are the same. You carry the problems with you wherever you go. So you can choose to stay in the relationship you started with and fight for your marriage and work on change in your own personal life and in your relationship, or you can continue to throw them away and start with a new one. And especially in the United States, we're at the point where our society says it's just easier to toss it aside.
That was Frank Laboda, and you also heard the voice of his wife Julie and of Father Watt Bracken speaking about the marriage rescue program called Retrovi.
Made up of these three words that I must say to you, I just call to say I love you. I just call to say how much I care.
¶¶
offensive in the Gaza Strip has been going on for more than 3 weeks now and has provoked widespread international condemnation for the high cost in civilian casualties and the grave humanitarian crisis it has spawned. Over the past few days, there have been signs that a ceasefire may soon be hammered out with Egyptian help. But in the meantime, the military strikes continue and the plight of civilians in the coastal strip remains desperate. But how do the people caught up in the middle of the death and destruction in Gaza feel about this conflict? What are their views about Israel and Hamas and the future of Gaza? Well, to find out more, I spoke to Owen Murray of the Irish Catholic Church's development and aid agency, Trocaire. Murray lived and worked in Gaza for nearly 2 years, from 2004, and went to it again last November.
Well, I suppose just to say that I have friends who are Israeli and who are in Gaza, and I'm talking to them all, and there's a myriad of different reactions, and people are, where they can, fleeing, and where they can, they are kind of indignant. I think they're in absolute disbelief that the world in the 21st century could allow such a thing to happen. And I think for my Israeli friends, who I'll declare an interest and say they're not necessarily representative of the Israeli population at large, a lot of them would be human rights activists, people who I would say are peace activists. They are hurt, they're in despair at what their country is doing to them. They believe, as everyone does, that Israel has the right to a secure future and that Israeli citizens have as much right to security as Palestinian citizens. But they also know that this isn't going to bring security to Israel. This isn't going to make any Israeli more secure. It's just going to perpetuate this horrific cycle of violence that's been going on now for 60 years.
Both sides have been criticised for pursuing the military option at all costs, even as we see the civilian casualties mount. Why do you think, or why do people there think there's such a determination to pursue this option when common sense would seem to suggest that this is unlikely to achieve a lasting change to the current situation on the ground, that violence never pays?
Well, I'm certainly an advocate of the philosophy that savagery begets only savagery. Unfortunately, the Middle East, and the Holy Land in particular, is an area that seems to be devoid of what we would consider as common sense. And it seems to be an area that is devoid of the idea that those very Christian ideals of turning the other cheek. It's hard to know what goes on in the mind of people who are ordering tanks and helicopters to fire in civilian areas or who are firing rockets into civilian areas. I can't say that I understand it, and I don't think any of the people that I know really do. But I suppose, like all of these things, fear somewhere is at the bottom, at the root cause of it. And people are afraid of being insecure. People are afraid of their own families' lives. People are afraid of not having a future. People are afraid of, you know, the economic collapse that's happening in Gaza. People are afraid that their last shreds of dignity are being taken away from them. And so I think anyone who reacts violently, somewhere inside them, it comes from that very deep-seated fear.
Now, you talked, of course, about the collective punishment, and as we well know, the people of Gaza have been, well, the victim of a crippling blockade by the Israelis for a number of years now, which has caused, of course, incredible hardship and growing resentment against Israel. But in Israel, there is actually a clear majority of the population who support the current offensive. You know, they cite the ongoing rocket attacks against Israel from Gaza. So it would seem that attitudes have hardened on both sides in recent years. Do you share that assessment?
Yes, I do think that attitudes have hardened on both sides, and I think that that is a byproduct of the violence that has been increasing on both sides for the last number of years. I would say that there is a desire amongst ordinary people for peace, particularly ordinary Palestinians who are suffering in a much deeper way than Israelis. I think it's worth noting the Latin Patriarchate in Jerusalem organizes an annual visit of American and European church leaders, and they've just left the Holy Land. And I think one of the things that I really struck me in their statement was a call for more listening and a call for both sides to have the will to listen and to sit down and to pay attention to how the other feels and how the other views things. I'm an Irish person. I was fortunate enough to not live in Northern Ireland and not to have to grow up in the worst part of the Troubles. But it is clear that if you want to resolve conflict, first of all, you have to respect the dignity of the other person. And second of all, you have to just begin to listen to what they say and what their narrative is. And of course, I don't believe that the Israeli government is particularly interested in doing that about Palestinians. And I don't think that Hamas have particular interest in listening to the narratives of the Israeli government either. And in the middle of this, ordinary people suffer.
When it comes to Hamas, how much support do they enjoy among the Gazan population? I mean, do some criticise them for using the high civilian casualties as a means of getting the Palestinian-Israeli conflict back in the spotlight on the international stage? In fact, do they wonder about their motives in continuing to, you know, lob rockets across at Israel?
I think there's a lot of divergent opinion within Gaza, within the occupied Palestinian territory, including Jerusalem and the West Bank, as to the motives and the value of what Hamas is doing, and also what other groups like Fatah. I mean, we're painted the picture that Hamas are bad and Fatah is good. Fatah are also firing rockets at Israel from Gaza and are also conducting operations, and it's not quite as simple as the media would portray it. For people in Gaza, I suppose Hamas are a multidimensional organization. They're not just the fellas in masks that we see on our TV screens with guns and rocket launchers and that kind of thing. They are the organization that, when a member of your family dies and you can't afford the funeral expenses, that they provide the funeral expenses. They are the organization that, if you need repairs in your home, plumbing or sewage pipes, they come around and make the necessary arrangements. They're the organization that are providing social and psychosocial counseling and trauma care for kids. So Hamas are, to people in Gaza, I think, more than just a military group. They're an organization that provides an awful lot of assistance to ordinary people. And when you're in a situation like people in Gaza are, then people will look to wherever and whatever they can for help, because they don't see help coming from almost anywhere else, including the outside world. So at the same time, most of my friends, in fact all of my friends, are absolutely opposed to the violence of Hamas. They're absolutely opposed to some of the Islamic ideologies of Hamas, and they would prefer a much more secular approach to things. But we have to remember that there are Christians inside the Gaza Strip, and I know some of them who voted for Hamas because they were so frustrated and angry at the failure of Fatah to bring any sort of a normal life and at the failure of the peace process to bring anything resembling peace.
So are you saying that Fatah, in the eyes of many Palestinians, is a somewhat discredited organisation nowadays?
Wholly discredited, and in most areas, I would say, almost close to defunct organisation. And most people don't really miss it. And that's why I think you see the fear amongst the Fatah party to hold elections for the presidency, even though those elections should be happening this January, because they are not confident in their own support. And there is, and I would say for some time, there has been a real crisis in political legitimacy and leadership for the Palestinian people. And what I would say concerns me greatly is that the Gaza Strip, a tiny, tiny area, 1.5 million people living there, squeezed in around half the population who are under the age of 18. What kind of leaders do we want those children to become in the future? And if we ask ourselves that question and then look at the events of the last number of weeks, to me at least, it's very clear that those children are going to find it very difficult to make a positive contribution towards peace and towards justice.
I was speaking to Owen Murray of Trocare. Well, that's all for today. We'll be back on the air at the same time tomorrow. You've been listening to Vatican Radio. Laudato Jesus Christus.